W moich dłoniach nowa książka wydawnictwa Rebis na smyczy Kremla, Donald Trump, Dmitrij Rybołowlew i oferta stulecia. Ja mam zaszczyt i przyjemność rozmawiać z autorem. My guest is Russian-American historian Yuri Felsztyński. Welcome to Radio RMFFM.
Thank you very much.
In your new book, you describe how the sale of Leonardo da Vinci's painting, Salvator Mundi, Savior of the World, helps President Donald Trump to get out from under $95 million debt that he owed Dmitry Rybołovlev, Russian billionaire and President Vladimir Putin's henchman. It is, in my opinion, very complicated, multi-threaded story. First of all, who is Dmitry Rybołovlev?
Well, Dmitry Rybołovlev is a Russian businessman, and there are a lot of them around us, who is extremely rich, who became extremely rich because he was involved in, trade of fertilizers, which is necessary for agriculture. Mm-hmm. The most interesting part is that he had and has two very important partners. One of his partners, FSB General Yuzupchenko, who has this difficult last name, but who became a very important FSB general with time. His second partner is Yuri Trutnev, who became a very important minister in Putin's cabinet. So this partnership of FSB general and a businessman Rybołovlev and a politician and member of the government, Yuri Trutnev, made out of Rybołovlev a very important, policy maker. Mm-hmm. Yes, and he of course became well known after he sold his business and became a billionaire. But in 2008, prior to this, he bought a Trump's villa for $95 million.
Can you call him a gangster following the Secret Services?
Well, I would try to avoid simplification. Mm-hmm. The Russian businessman who started business right before collapse of the Soviet Union and continued to do so after, had to cooperate with criminals because the Soviet law didn't allow private business to exist. So anyone who started his own business became a semi-criminal. And mm-hmm. since those business people could not rely on law enforcement agencies, they usually would of Russia among criminal, world, both in the center of Russia and in the cities, other small cities of Russia. And Rybołovlev was one of those business people who, by definition, had to be connected to criminals. And when you deal with, when you operate in criminal world, it's very difficult not to become a criminal. So at one point, Rybołovlev was arrested and put in prison for 11 months because there was a suspicion that he was involved in the murder of one of his, partners, colleagues, let's say. It's difficult to say whether he was involved or not. At the end, we have to stress, he was acquitted and was released from prison. But it seems to be that this release happened thanks to the involvement of the FSB General mm-hmm. Yuzupchenko.
Secret services.
State security, secret mm-hmm. services, mm-hmm. who at that time was in charge of the entire region, the Perm region. This was a high position. And mm-hmm. from that moment, Rybołovlev became a partner with the FSB, and everything in his business now was working smoothly without any complications. Mm-hmm. Then they needed the third partner, because the business was growing, it became international. In addition to the FSB connections, they also needed the roof, another roof, the political roof. And they got connected to Yuri Trutnev, who became mayor of Perm city first, then the governor of the region, and then became a very important minister in Putin's cabinet. So this made Rybolovlev really very important, very rich. They sold the business for $9 billion approximately. So he became extremely rich, his partners became extremely rich, and the government was using him from time to time to for different political maneuvers and connections, specifically in places like Cyprus, Monaco, and in the United States as well.
The story of his divorce from his wife with huge money in the background is fascinating, isn't it?
Well, it is, because you see, the simple rule was that when you divorce your wife, living abroad, you give to your wife approximately 50% of what you have. And in case of Rybolovlev, officially, he had those approximately $9 billion as his wealth. Now, we know that he was not the only partner. I mean, we know that this probably, to be fair, this should be divided between three people, Rybolovlev, Yezhushchenko, the FSB general, and Yuri Trutnev, a minister in Putin's government. Rybolovlev was fighting against the decision to pay $4 billion to his wife. And at the end, he paid just $600 million. And in the process, he tried to put his wife in prison to force her to sign a smaller amount of the divorce agreement. But for this, he actually had to change the laws in Cyprus, so the Cyprus judicial system could arrest his wife. So this was a really detective story, really. A detective story about corruption of international scale, about corruption in several countries. Monaco, law enforcement was involved. Cyprus law enforcement was involved. President of Cyprus was involved. This became really very, very, very interesting and complicated. Then, as we know, Rybolovlev paid to his wife just, quote-unquote, $600 million.
Your book paints a really terrifying picture of the influence of Russian oligarchs and the secret services behind them in the Western world. You mentioned Cyprus, for example, Monaco. It is shocking for me. Do Russians still operate this way in Europe and America?
Well, they do, although we have to say that after 1922, after Russia invaded Ukraine and became openly an aggressive country, some people should say that we should call Russia aggressive after 2014 or after 2008 when they invaded Georgia. But in reality, nothing changed until 22. After 22, it was not fine anymore to take Russian money. Prior to this, Russian money became a very important tool of the Russian government to influence politics, especially in Europe, and politicians, because the FSB, Putin, realized that it's much cheaper to buy a politician in order to influence the policy of the country. And there are a lot of people who actually were taking Russian money for many, many years. Let's name some of them. Former Chancellor of Germany, Schröder, for example, was receiving
the Prime Minister.
Constant. Mm-hmm. as a salary money from Russia. Miloš Zeman, president of the Czech Republic for many years, Viktor Orban, those money were paid differently. In case of Schroeder, he was getting a salary. In case of Miloš Zeman, he was getting payments for participation in different international conference in Greece, for example, and also he was receiving money for his political party. In case of Viktor Orban, these are low prices for oil and gas. Le Pen was receiving money as a loan. Northern League in Italy was receiving money through permission to sell Russian gas for low prices, well, to buy it from Russia for low prices and to resell it for market prices. So this were different form of payments. But at the end, there were a lot of politicians who were taking Russian money. So Trump was not an exception. His case became known because he became the president of the United States. Mm-hmm. And it's only after this people started to pay attention to some of his questionable relations with Russian money, including or starting with Dmitry Rybolov.
What was the so-called loan from Dmitry Rybolov to Donald Trump?
Well, this was to Donald Trump, this was not a loan, this was a payment. But you see, Russia started to pour Russian money into Trump's system in 2007. Since 2007, Donald Trump Jr., who was responsible for real estate operations of Trump, visited Russia six times in a period of 18 months. He once stated publicly during a real estate conference in New York that Russian money accepted by Trump's system in unproportionally high level. So there were a lot of Russian money coming from different directions. And knowing how Russia was operating in 2007-2008, we know that this could not be done unless Putin's give instructions to support Trump with Russian money. And then, of course, in 2008, Rybolovlev, in the middle of the real estate crisis in the United States, bought Trump's villa for $95 million. This was the highest amount ever paid in the United States those days for real estate. And this was probably a three times overpayment, at least, because in 2008, in the middle of the
crisis,
real estate crisis, this villa could not be sold, period, for any amount of money. And Trump was facing possibility of six bankruptcy. So Rybolovlev actually saved him from that bankruptcy. But once again, this could not happen unless his partners, FSB general and the member of the Putin's government, Trutnev, would give Rybolovlev permission or instructions to do so. Trump later said to Michael Cohen that he knew that this was done with Putin's permission and this is Putin's money. But once again, this was not the end of the story. This was just part of it.
Mm-hmm. What role did the Salvator Mundi painting play in this whole scandal?
Well, this is probably a story which has more questions still than answers. First of all, we do not know if this is really Salvator Mundi. It's very questionable if it is. Then, of course, it was sold by Rybolovlev for enormous amount of money, $450 million. This was the highest price ever paid for any painting. Nothing even close happened before. Then it's interesting that this painting was bought by Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, what by itself was not expected at all. And then what's important, the timing, it was bought in the middle of the coup d'etat with when you know, Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia put his, you know, members of his family in basically in prison. And, you know, this was a major coup d'etat in Saudi Arabia. And in the middle of that crisis, he somehow found time to be involved in buying, you know, Salvador Mundi painting through the auction. So this was all very, very, very strange. And prior to this, we have to say Rybalovlev was following Trump in order to meet him and in order, as I suspect, ask him to repay his well, not loan, but to pay back him for what Rybalovlev done for Trump in 2008. You see, in 2008, when Rybalovlev was buying villa, he did not know, of course, that Trump would become the president of the United States.
And so is this now, is this a credible scenario of events or just a conspiracy theory?
Well, this depends which one. The part that Trump took a lot of Russian money, including mm-hmm. those $95 million.
I mean the role of very high-ranking Arabs playing in this story.
Well, again, we do know that there was a painting. We do know that no one's seen that painting anymore. We do not understand why Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia became interested in that particular painting, and why he, you know, felt comfortable to pay $400 million for a Russian oligarch Rybalovlev. So this all happened. What we do not know, of course, again, why he bought that painting, and why the price for this painting was probably inflated, because it seems to be that the second person who was aiming to buy that painting was also a person known to Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. In other words, they were competing with each other to increase the price of the painting. We also know that there is some additional information that after that auction, a Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia or people close to him bought additional $300 million of paintings from Rybalovlev. But again, we even do not know who bought it precisely and what paintings mm-hmm. bought. So the financial relations between Rybalovlev and Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia are very, questionable. But once again, we have more questions here than answers.
Mm-hmm. The image of the art market with various shady transactions like this is very dark, isn't it? Can purchasing paintings and other works of art be money laundering, in your opinion?
That's correct. And when you talk to people who work for auctions like Christie, and if they, you know, if they're open, if they're sincere to you, they would tell you that even now the sales of paintings very often is used for money laundering. In case of this particular painting, it does look as a money laundering for several obvious reasons. First, it's questionable whether the painting is Salvador Mundi, what means that a person who is paying $400 million for that questionable painting might have some other ideas in mind. Then we do not really know what happened to this very expensive painting. No one has seen it anymore. No one really knows where it is now. So it's all very, very suspicious.
Mm-hmm. Could the Russian secret services have any recordings compromising Donald Trump?
Well, I just discussed this issue with
Oleg Kalugin.
Right. Oleg Kalugin is the highest ranking defector, although he defected very slowly in a period of collapse of the Soviet Union, and he lives in Washington, D.C. What he was saying that he knows that, you know, Russia was, well, KGB those days, was following Donald Trump when he was in the Soviet Union, was paying attention to his activity in Russia. But it's very difficult to claim and to say, for example, that Russia has compromising materials and that Russia was using it in order to blackmail Donald Trump or to recruit him. This is just impossible to prove. That's why I never made this claim. But I think what's obvious that a young man coming to the Soviet Union, a rich man with a well-known father involved in real estate, you know, he was under the you know, attention of the KGB, and it's taken into account that Trump was always interested in both money and I think, you know, we should expect that KGB was trying to get some information or some compromising material related to Trump. But this cannot be proven, and we probably should not go this way when we analyze why Trump is so loyal to Putin. I think financial issue is...
But maybe attacks on Donald Trump are part of the political fight. Maybe it's not a Russian collusion, but a Russian illusion.
He's also always avoiding possibility to criticize him or Russia for what Russia is doing. Trump is suspiciously nice to Putin. Trump is suspiciously soft to Putin. Trump is supporting Putin even in case of you know, Russian-Ukrainian war. So this demands an explanation, and I think the reasonable explanation is that Trump you know, feel dependable on Putin. And money, of course, is very important issue, but it's probably more than this. We need to find an explanation of this strange Trump's behavior. The fact that we are not able to find this explanation doesn't mean that it doesn't exist. It's just we are trying to be very careful to make claims which could not be proven. Trump, obviously, as we know, was trying to find a way to communicate with Putin you know, without witnesses. This was happening when he was president. This is happening even now. As we know, Trump was trying to include in his cabinet people who were, you know, pro-Russian, like Paul Manafort, whom he was trying to include in his circle as the person in charge of his presidential campaign, like Michael Flynn, who was receiving money from Russia and whom Trump nominated to be national security advisor, like Tillerson, who was working for Russia many, many years, received a medal from Putin, and by Russia was considered a very pro-Russian politician. So once again, Trump was extremely loyal to Putin every time, and this demands explanation. And I think I was trying to give answers to this suspicious behavior in this book.
Thank you very much for the interview.
Thank you very
My guest was Russian-American historian Yuri Felshtinsky. Thank you very much.